Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Gus Saloom. I'll be your host for the next hour. Many of you are not from the Bay Area and are visiting San Francisco for the Build Conference. You probably have summer plans that start right here this week. No matter what your summer plans are, if you're planning a vacation trip, you probably started planning for it weeks or months in advance. You picked a destination, you decided how you're going to get there. On the day of the trip, you're all packed. You head to the train station or to the airport, and you go through a process to get to that vacation destination. No matter what you're choosing to do on that trip, you know that there's a process to get into that place. If you're going to a theme park, you have to stand in line, you have to have paid your ticket. Sometimes you have to be taller than a certain height to get into certain rides. Even to get to the Build Conference itself, you had to go through a check-in process. You have to have registered in advance. Think of the Windows Store as a vacation destination. And think of the certification process as that necessary process that you have to go through to get to that vacation destination. The certification process enforces a set of requirements. These requirements are meant to ensure the integrity and enjoyment of the user experience of the applications that are in the store. The requirements are public. I'm not going to go into every requirement that we enforce. Instead, I'll be spending some time telling you about what we've learned from the hundreds of thousands of submissions of apps in the last few months since we launched the Windows 8 store. And I'll be pointing out the common mistakes that developers make. These are mistakes that we've seen in a lot of submissions, and I'm sure that a big percentage of you would make them if you were submitting your first app especially. The requirements are meant to ensure that the applications that do make it in the store provide value to the users, behave predictably on all the machines that they have, whether it's the Acer that you've received yesterday, the Surface Pros, the big desktops, the two-in-ones, etc. They're also meant to ensure that the customers feel that they're in control of their device and their data, whether it's data that's leaving the box or data that their kids may be exposed to. And finally, the requirements want to ensure that the content of those applications are appropriate for the global audience of the Windows users. The certification process is mostly a pipeline. You, the developers, are on the left. You're building an application. You submit it to the developer dashboard along with the screenshots, the description text that you want to use for listing data. Once you've submitted everything you need to submit, you send the application for certification. The certification process is mostly two major steps. The first one is a technical compliance check. The second one is a content compliance check. These are the two blue boxes in the middle. When the application passes these two steps, it's ready for release to the world. It may be released immediately or at a future date that you may have configured. In parallel to all of this, there's, of course, a security scanning step, but most of you don't have to worry about it unless your build pipeline may have been compromised. Currently, the certification process is averaging about 2.5 days for applications, but the distribution of the actual wait time is quite wide. Some applications wait many days. Some applications go through it faster, sometimes in a few hours. Hopefully, if you follow the steps that I'll be giving you today, the tips that I'll be giving you today, you'll be on lower than the average so that your applications make it to your customers as quickly as you want. The first step of this certification process, as I'm indicating in this diagram, is to sign up to the developer dashboard. You have to have an account. So that's tip number one. Create your store account right now if possible. Why, you say? I haven't built the app. I don't even know when it's going to be ready for the world to see. But at least remember that the sign-up process is not instantaneous. We care about the identity of the developers that are signing up. So we want to make sure that the accounts are not compromised. That Microsoft account that you're using to sign up is not compromised. So we ask you to proof up. We ask all developers to tie their account with a known international credit card. What the step entails is us charging you a small amount. You'll go see it on your statement, and we ask you to provide that small amount on the developer dashboard. This first step can take up to 2 days, and you're probably familiar with it if you've signed up with some of the services out there. So it may take up to 2 days. Keep that in mind. When you're signing up, we ask you to either identify yourself as an individual or as a company. If you're signing up as a company, step two is required. We want to make sure that you are authorized to represent the company that you're claiming to represent. So we've signed up, we've partnered with a third-party provider, Symantec. Symantec is going to contact you and ask you to provide some proof that you're authorized by the company. They may call the phone number that you've provided, and if the company that you're representing has been recently created, especially if you're a small company, just registered in an LLC or an S-Corp, that phone and number may not be available in the databases they use, so they'll contact you via email and ask you to provide notarized forms of identification, et cetera. This second step may take up to 2 weeks. So 2 weeks, 2 days. If you're not going to create your store account now, at least factor that in your release plan. Like the slide says, if these verifications aren't complete, even if you submit your app and its screenshots and its metadata, the app will not start that certification. Those two middle boxes in blue that I showed in the previous diagram, it'll be staying in it'll be on hold until you complete these two steps. If you're planning to submit a paid app, there's an additional requirement. We want to make sure that we have on file valid tax forms. So fill those tax forms and submit them early. Otherwise, the app, even if it's certified, it'll not get released. We've seen a lot of developers that get surprised by these two incomplete steps. They have their app ready. They're ready to see the app get to the Windows Store and see how the users are going to use it. And they'll get these notifications on the developer dashboard informing them that they're not quite there yet. If you want to know more about the sign-up process, I'm providing a link at the bottom of the slide. And in fact, throughout this presentation, you'll see links to relevant content where you can go dig deeper. Tip number two. Reserve an appropriate name for your application. The Windows Store enforces an app name uniqueness rule. And it's first come, first serve. You'll notice that there's only one calculator app in the store, for example, and one news app. Reserve the name of your app early, especially if you're planning to build a brand and a marketing campaign around it. The tip is to reserve a name that you know you have the rights for. Even if the name is available, you may be surprised later on if the legitimate owner of a certain trademark shows up. They may force you to relinquish that name. Your application will no longer be listed in the store or may exit certification. You'll be sent back at the end of the line, and you'll have to pick a new name and resubmit the application all over again. So these are two critical steps. Tip number three. Only build and submit applications that customers want to see. A lot of you, all of you, have ideas for great applications. And at some point of the development cycle, you may be tempted in submitting an unfinished app just to see what the certification process looks like. The recommendation is to build a strong portfolio from the start. Your application is going to go through the certification pipeline. Reviewers are going to see it. And if it does make it to the Windows Store, customers will be exposed to your brand and to your app name and may be disappointed by seeing an application that's not delivering all the promises that it's making. We're providing a lot of rich SDK samples that'll give you a jump start on development. We've seen, for example, a lot of developers build RSS readers, build on the SDK sample that we're providing for RSS readers. If you look at the app on its own, great, it's an RSS reader. But when you notice that every one of the thousands of developers has access to that one, that sample, and is able to submit an application like it, all of a sudden the users don't look at you as a developer that's creating a useful and creative applications. And over time, the reviewers are learning to recognize the SDK samples and rejecting them. If you're planning to submit a collection of applications, if that's what your business model is, you want to get as many eyeballs on the ads that you're serving through your apps, and you're submitting them in bulk, your applications are going to be in a backlog waiting for the reviewers to get to them. We're going to select all these apps and ask them to step out of the line in a way so that we certify them. Just like when you're at an airport and there's a family with a lot of suitcases, their check-in process is going to be delayed just because they have a lot of stuff to declare, and the agent will have to go through a lot of documentation to go through it. So don't be that family. Otherwise, or expect to be delayed every time you submit an app or an update to an app. If your application is tightly linked to a website, if you already have a website with a lot of user scenarios, and you want an app that reflects those user scenarios to bring your brand to the Windows Store, make sure that you go beyond these controls that are wrapping the website. WebView or the iframes do a great job at showing web content within an application, but do more. Use the platform capabilities, whether it's in Windows 8 or in Windows 8.1, to provide an experience that's better than what the website is. Otherwise, customers would probably rather go to your website directly. You can use live tiles, you can use the share contracts, you can use the notification system, or any of the thousands of APIs that we're making available in Windows 8.1, or Windows 8, in fact. So you've created an account, you've reserved the name, you're starting to work on a useful app, and you started to explore the APIs that are available on the platform. You'll quickly learn that some of the APIs are protected by app capabilities. Those app capabilities have to be declared in the app manifest if you don't want the exceptions to be thrown at runtime. There are about a dozen and a half capabilities that you can see in the Visual Studio UI. You can check them. The recommendation, the requirement, in fact, is to only declare the capabilities that you do need. You can always add capabilities in the future in case you're using APIs that you hadn't thought of or hadn't used in the first few releases. So you're not locking yourself to the first set of capabilities that you're declaring in that first release. So only declare the ones that you do actually need. And there are three capabilities that are reserved for special use. They're the shared user certificates, documents library, and enterprise auth. If the user scenario that you're building relies on any of these three capabilities, take note that if we see an application that's declaring these capabilities, we'll also ask it to step out of the line and go through a special review. That special review is slower than the regular review that other apps would go through. So factor that in your release plans. These capabilities are restricted to company accounts, so that choice that you made when you signed up for the developer dashboard account early on is suddenly important. Individual accounts will never be allowed to use these capabilities with the current implementation of the developer dashboard. We also ask you to provide a written justification that describes how you're using these capabilities, and we review those justifications in the context of the user of the description of your app. We've learned in the last few months that documents library in particular is being used by developers, or is the intent to use it, is not in line with the allowed user scenarios. Documents library in Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 is not a repository for configuration files or a place to store log files. It's not a method to use a file-based communication with desktop services or with other Windows Store apps. Nor is it a place to persist files in case the application is uninstalled. These are patterns of user scenarios that we've seen time and time again, and we've rejected all of them. So look for other methods to implement these user scenarios. If you follow the news, if you've been following the news recently, you know that customers care a lot about their privacy and the privacy of their data. When you're choosing capabilities in the manifest, you may be choosing one or more capabilities that network enable the app, that allow it to transmit data over the wire, over the air. We require that any app that's network enabled to provide a link to a privacy statement. Some of these capabilities are internet client server, etc. Note that the Visual Studio default templates have the internet client capability declared. So unless you remove that, you uncheck it, you will have to provide a privacy statement. Put your shoes in, put yourself in the shoes of a customer, of a user using your application. I'm using an example of Bing Maps here. The app has access to the location of the user and it has access to the internet. Users will want to know what the developer of this app, in this case Microsoft, will do with that sensitive data. That's why we require that every app has a link to the privacy statement on the settings pane. The reviewers, the app testers, will be looking for a link to your privacy statement in the settings pane. It does not have to be on the first level. It can be nested deeper, but it has to be discoverable. Just like users will assume that the link doesn't exist if they can't find it easily, the reviewers will assume the same. So provide the link there, and that's code that you have to write. Also, think about the customers that haven't acquired your app yet. They're exploring the Windows Store, and they want to know what you would do with your with their data if they were to install the app and run it. That's why we also require that you provide a link to the privacy statement if you are network enabled. This link will be provided later on after you've done coding, compiling, testing, and submitting the application. You'll have to submit it on the developer dashboard. So take note of the URL that you're using in the app and submit that same link later on. Users will be told what network capabilities the app has declared and will be provided the link to that statement that you've provided. This is one of the top reasons why applications have been failing the certification process in the last few months. So this is quite important. Remember that both links that you provide, the one in the settings pane and the one in the listing data, have to be the same. After all, you have one privacy statement. We're not writing that privacy statement on your behalf. We don't know what your app does. We do not know how it handles the user data. However, requirement 4.1, and you can follow the link at the bottom of the slide, provides you with a blueprint, with a template to follow to write your own statement. Customers want to know which personal data you're collecting, if any. They want to know how you're storing that data, how you're sharing it, if you're sharing it with third parties, how they can have access to it. We list this template, what I just said, in requirement 4.1. And I strongly recommend that you read it and see how it applies to your app. Remember that in a lot of jurisdictions, the IP number is considered personal data. So by the mere fact of an application connecting to a server, you'd have to disclose what happens with that IP number and how it's stored and shared and transmitted. Tip number 6. When you're building your application, you're already thinking about how you're going to promote it later. You've seen in the Windows Store client that applications that have high star ratings and good reviews have a higher chance of appearing prominently in the store experience. So a lot of developers are building features in the app where they solicit a user rating after they see that the user has spent some time in the app. If it's a game, maybe on the third launch, or maybe at the end of the first level, you throw a prompt on the screen hey, dear user, if you like my app, please give me a good rating. It'll help me, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you can do this. It's not prohibited. However, if you offer a reward for positive ratings, if you say, give me a great review, give me a 5-star rating, and I'll unlock level 2 for you for free, or I'll give you 1,000 coins for free to spend in the app, you'd be crossing the line. So do not offer rewards for positive reviews. Reviews are, imagine that we did allow it. You are able to offer coins, and you are able to offer free levels for those users. Suddenly, the entire review and rating system is undermined, and those reviews aren't credible anymore. So this is an easy one to understand, but we've seen some developers cross the line here. So let's recap where we are. We've signed up for an account on time. We've reserved an app name that we have the rights to use. We've decided on an application that we know customers would love. We've explored all the APIs that we'd need to use, and we've chosen the ones that have allowable capabilities. And that we've chosen the capabilities for the APIs that we chose. We've provided the privacy statement in case we declared capabilities that enable the network transmission of data off the box. We've built a feature in anticipation of collecting user ratings in the future. That brings us to the next step. Tip: test your app thoroughly. Well, no duh, you say. We're professional developers. Of course we're going to test our app thoroughly. Again, this is based on empirical data that we've collected over the last 8 months. We've seen a lot of developers not test their app on all the possible permutations of hardware that users have. Remember, it is required that the application works as well with a keyboard and mouse as on a machine that's touch-enabled. So go through all your user scenarios. Go through all the code paths with a keyboard and mouse. Make sure that they work. Then do the same again with a touch-enabled device, using it only with touch. Verify that all the touch-enabled surfaces do respond to touch and have visual feedback. If you're building an application and you're compiling it with any CPU in Visual Studio, test it on as many architectures as you can, ARM, x64, and x86. If you've chosen to target your application to a subset of these, make sure that you do test it on these permutations. Do not assume that because it's working on ARM, that the implementation would work just as well on other devices. And test your app on different screen sizes. Small, big, the Acer, the higher ones, low DPI, high DPI, etc. We've seen applications that are either cropped because of some implementation decisions that developers have done, and that leads to a subpar experience. Those applications were asked to go back to the end of the line, get fixed, and come back. When you submit an update to an application, it's first come, first serve, like I said. Every update will start from the end. So you don't have a spot that's saved for you because you had to fix some mistake that you've made. You have to wait back in line, which is why these tips are important. If you follow them, if you have an application that passes all the rules, it's going to go through as smoothly as possible, faster than 2.2 days on average. If you make a mistake, then you're going to repeatedly go to a line that's becoming longer and longer because of the increased attention from interest from developers. On the testing piece, if you've attended Eric's talk about an hour ago, he talked about the commerce-related pitfalls that developers are making. Applications and developers can use in-app purchases in Windows Store in the Windows Store. In-app purchases are configured on the developer dashboard. You specify a token ID, you specify a name for your in-app purchase, and you specify a price. When you want to test your application on the local box, we recommend that you use the current app simulator. That's an easy way to have a local file that you can play with to change the different licensing states and the different price points that you may be wanting to offer these in-app purchases for, and see if the UX is still consistent. And that's especially important, this testing is especially important if your app is localized. Do all the strings in all the languages still fit on the screen? Or am I okay with how these different states are reflected in the user experience? So that's what Current App Simulator is important for. We ask you to replace all references to Current App Simulator with the API that would actually make the call to the Windows Store server when the app is in the hands of the users. So replace all instances of Current App Simulator with Current App. And I'm saying test your app when disconnected, and I'll show you a small code example for why that is important. Imagine that you're loading that listing information about the in-app purchases from the Current App Simulator. It'll return the names, price points, the currencies, and you're probably drawing a purchase UX using that data. Then we ask you to replace the reference to Current App Simulator with Current App. And you probably have an if, else, and if, the preprocessor directives, right before you submit. You're obviously going to do a try-catch. The reason why the try-catch is important in this case, and the pattern that we've observed in these applications that have failed to do that, is that in the local testing, that configuration file that's loaded in the Current App Simulator is always present. So it hardly ever throws an exception. But then right before they submit, they package that version, that application to submit to the Windows Store, they replace it with Current App in the release version here. And they have no opportunity to test that Windows Store service, especially on the first submission. The data for the in-app purchases, the name, the price, et cetera, is not available on the server yet. The application is submitted to certification. The app reviewer launches the app as in release mode. The app attempts to contact the Windows Store server to get that data. That data doesn't exist. An exception is thrown. And if it's not handled properly, either the app crashes or that purchase page that they're building off of that data is a blank. So although it sounds like a very trivial tip, wrap your calls with a try-catch in this case and verify that the experience that users will get if the Windows Store is not reachable in a disconnected state, for instance, that the user experience is meaningful. Either give them a message reminding them or pointing out that the app may be in disconnected mode, or draw some demo data that would represent what the user experience would look like. Okay, we've built the app, we tested it properly on all the devices, on all the hardware, all the screen sizes, etc. Now it's time to package it. This tip is mostly important if you want to start supporting Windows 8.1 apps. All the tips that I'm giving in the talk, by the way, apply just as well to Windows 8 apps that you're submitting today. So these are not to be remembered later on when we start accepting Windows 8.1 apps. So manage the app package version numbers. What does that mean? Currently, if you want to target more than one architecture, you create an app, you reserve a name for it, you start coding it, your app manifest has an app ID, and the OS min version number is 6.2.1. This is what we look for when we're looking for Windows 8 apps. At runtime, when the user wants to install an app, their client would go get the package that's the most appropriate for their PC. That's how it works currently. You can have up to three packages, or it can be one package if it's any CPU, if it's targeting any CPU. To support Windows 8.1, you have to submit another set of packages that use the same app ID, but that target instead OS min version 6.3.1. At runtime, again, the store client would check with the server and see which package is the most appropriate for the local machine and go get that one. If it's a Windows 8.1 machine, it'll get one of the packages on the right. If it's a Windows 8 machine, it'll get one of the packages on the left. The reason why I'm bringing up this as a tip for certification is because the version of the first Windows 8.1 package that you submit is very critical. The rule is that the version of any Windows 8 package that you submit now and in the future has to have a smaller version number than the one of the first Windows 8 package that you've submitted. Okay, so you have the Windows 8.1 package that you've submitted for this app, and you have all the Windows 8 version numbers that you're going to submit in the future. And the rule is on the screen. Windows 8 has to always have a smaller version number than Windows 8.1. So the ranges of the version numbers have to never overlap. If you use Visual Studio, Visual Studio will take care of that for you. When you're associating your first Windows 8.1 package with a store account, it'll bump the minor number for you, and that's the recommendation. If you're managing them manually, bump the minor number. Each of the four tiers of the version number is a 16-bit number. So bumping the minor number alone would leave more than 4 billion version numbers for you for your Windows 8 packages. Okay? Next tip. Sure. Yeah. We're not forcing you to change the minor number alone. The rule that I had on the previous slide is the rule that we're enforcing. Bumping the minor number is just a recommendation. The assumption is that going forward, most customers will be on the Windows 8.1 platform, and we're trying to make that easy with the free updates, etc. The version number that's in the package is not very visible on the UI. You can always present them with the versioning scheme and branding that you want. But these are the rules for Windows 8.1 packages. Unfortunately, these are the rules that will be enforced at certification, and we recommend that the ISVs take that into consideration when they're upgrading to Windows 8.1. You can always submit another app with another ID that will have its own ranges of numbers. Okay. So we've built the app, we've tested it, we made sure that we're packaging it with the right version numbers. Now it's almost time to submit to the Windows Store. The next step is run the Windows App Certification Kit. Why? Let's go back to that first diagram for the pipeline. The first box, the yellow box in this diagram, is the Windows App Certification Kit. That kit is how we enforce the technical requirements on applications. The same kit that we're making available to you in the SDK, and we're making it available via Visual Studio, is what we run in the pipeline. So if you're failing it locally, you're going to fail it when you submit to the Windows Store. And you might as well know that in advance before waiting in line for your application to go through. So run the Windows App Certification Kit. The kit that Windows 8 developers have currently is version 2.2, before we get to the version number. When you're packaging your app, you have a link to launch the Windows App Certification Kit. And that's a tight integration with Visual Studio. It's not a requirement that you launch it, but like this step is saying, we strongly recommend that you do it. The version that you have in Windows 8, for Windows 8, is version 2.2. There's a new version number. There's a new package that will be available to you that's available to you in the preview SDK. While it is available to you now, we're not enforcing it yet. We'll start enforcing it later this year. But it does support both Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 packages. And it does include all the tests that we run for Windows 8. We recommend that you start using Kit 3.0 even if you're still submitting Windows 8 apps. This kit has a number of improvements. The initial scanning, looking for your application on the local system, is much faster. We've improved it from the order of minutes to the order of seconds in some cases. It allows you to remotely deploy from Visual Studio the right kit on the right machine, the right remote machine. I recommended earlier that you do test your app on all the architectures, including ARM. Now we're making it easier than ever to deploy the ARM version of the kit on an ARM machine remotely from Visual Studio. And if your application has a hard time with a particular test, version 2.2 doesn't give you the choice to target that test alone easily from the UI. Version 3.0 does. So you can say, on the local machine, I only want to run the crash test, the crashes and hangs test, for instance. We will run all the tests when you submit to the store, but this is an easy way for you to incorporate the kit in the many iterations of dev test build iterations. So use it as soon as you can. Next tip. You've tested the app, and you're ready to submit to the Windows Store. You have your developer dashboard account already, and you have the name ready. You start uploading the package. Let's look at what the user experience is going to be once they have the app in the store. This is a view of the Windows 8.1 client. There's a field for descriptions on the left. There's a field for features. You can submit up to 8 screenshots with their captions. You'll choose a category for your app and a subcategory if present, as well as an age rating. Users will read that description, will scroll through your screenshots, and will make a call on whether to buy the app or acquire it based on what you've told them about it. The requirement is to maintain truth in advertising. It's very easy at the end of the development lifecycle, when the app is ready, to have a disconnect between the person entering this marketing information and the person that actually wrote the code. So make sure that whoever's maintaining your marketing copy is in sync with what the developers actually implemented, what the engineering teams actually implemented. Only include in the description and the features mentions of what you actually implemented in the app. Do not say that you're implementing some features only to disappoint the users later on. If you're showing screenshots of the app, show actual screenshots of the application, not of prototypes that had more bells and whistles than you actually delivered. We do allow you to enhance these images, these screenshots. They don't have to be direct screenshots of the app. So you could represent them on different Windows devices or any way that you may want to brand them. But we do require that you add a fine print saying that these images have been doctored and include that in the captions. In fact, we recommend that the first screenshot that you submit in the list is a branded image. This will help you with promotability. Now, in particular about truth in advertising, if your application relies on features or sources of content that are not available in all the markets that you're submitting your app to, disclose that to the users. You may, for example, you may have a media streaming app. You have audio streams and video streams. And you've chosen to list that app everywhere in the world, except that you know that some of the video streams are not available, for example, in Canada. Tell your Canadian customers that the video feature that they may be appearing in some of the screenshots will not work properly in their market. So disclose geographical restrictions of your content and your feature set. Also disclose if the app strongly relies on the presence of a certain hardware peripheral. If your app relies on a card reader or a fitness dongle or a camera, etc., tell your users so that they know that they will not get all the value prop from your application without the presence of that piece of hardware. Third, in maintaining truth in advertising, you have to provide the descriptions in all the languages that your app supports. The list of languages that the app supports is configured in the app manifest. You can see, and we remind you of what that list is on the developer dashboard when you're submitting. You have to submit localized, translated content in those descriptions and screenshots. And if your application has partial localization, meaning you may have an app, a news reading app, where some of the sources are, say, in Hungarian and some of them are in English. When you're submitting your app and you're claiming that it's an English app, remind the users that some of the sources may be in Hungarian. And remind your Hungarian users that some of the content may be in English, so that they will not be surprised when they don't understand all the content that they're seeing. So let's recap truth in advertising. Accurately describe your features, what's in, what's out, and have your marketing team talk to your engineering team, so that only the features that ended up in the actual product are described. Next tip. Windows and the Windows Store are family-friendly products. We said that the rules, the requirements, want the apps to be predictable and to put the customer in control. The parental controls of Windows, if configured by the parents, will restrict what the kids will see when they're browsing the store. If you have a 9-year-old, they will not see apps that are rated at 12+, 16+, or higher. To choose a store rating, examine, one, the content that's in your app. We have a number of pivots for the content. And based on the amount and the prominence of that type of content in the app, you'll have to choose one age rating or another. The gauges that I have on the screen here are not the requirement. Go read what's on that link at the bottom. It'll describe exactly what we're expecting to see at each age level. Remember that 18+ is currently reserved for a subset of games, those games that have a game rating from a third-party ratings board. So 18+ is off-limits for most types of applications. In addition to the content in your applications, also look at the features. There's one particular feature that causes trouble. If the app shares personal information or allows the users to share personal information in an uncontrolled manner, the app must be listed as 12+. Uncontrolled manner includes, by the way, most social media services. Unless you have parental control features that would disable that type of sharing, any such types of apps would have to be listed at 12+ or higher. And the listing data of the apps, all of them, not just these, has to be suitable for a 12-year-old. Even if you're submitting a 16+ app, the listing data, those descriptions and the text that you're submitting, has to be suitable for a 12-year-old. So remember that. And finally, the final tip for the day. Right before you submit, there's a field called Notes to Testers. This is your way to communicate with the reviewers that will be looking at your app, what your app does. If you want to give them test credentials on how to access your test servers, this is the place to do so. If there are features that are not easily accessible, but that you're describing in your listing data, tell your testers how to get to it. Otherwise, they'll assume that you're over-promising what your app is able to do. And these are real people. So be friendly. They'll appreciate it. They look at hundreds of apps a day. And they would appreciate meaningful and comprehensive notes when you're giving it to them. I hope the tips that I gave you today are useful, and that no matter what your vacation plans are this summer, you will get there as smoothly as you'll be submitting apps to the Windows Store going forward. I've included a number of links to a number of resources during this talk. Feel free to go in a deep dive in all of them. I'll give you a moment to get a picture of the screenshot. There are a number of sessions related to the Windows Store apps as well. Ted Dworkin gave an overview yesterday. The sessions are already available on recording. Rick, an hour ago, talked about monetization opportunities. Alwyn will be talking tomorrow at 9 a.m. about how to protect your application from unauthorized uses. While I've defined some tips to pass through certification, there even are more tips on how to qualify for promotion in the store. And that's what Pete Brown's talk is tomorrow at, I forgot what time it is, it's the wow factor. And if you're starting to think about porting your app from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1, go watch the video for Polita's talk on how to upgrade Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. With this, this is a summary of all the tips that I gave you today, and I'll be happy to take your questions in the remaining 15 minutes. Okay. The question is, tell me more about the content verification process and anything that you may, any tips that I have to say about that. It's real people that we hire to look at your app. So we go beyond the algorithms that we may be running to detect the most egregious mistakes. These are people that were hired not as QA engineers, but rather as users. So they're looking for content compliance. The content rules are described in the certification requirements. What they do is they get the app and they start using it, following the descriptions that you've provided, as well as the notes to testers that you're telling them in private. And they make sure that the app complies with all those requirements. If the application seems to have some issues, they may either ask for the help of a colleague or they may escalate it to more experienced reviewers. And that's where you start seeing the delays in certification. So the more upfront you are about how the app is supposed to work, the easier you make it for the testers to go through it, the faster you're going to go through certification. Does that answer it?
Yes.
Okay. Other questions? I'm familiar with BASIC.
No. Small basic is a programming environment for children.
Okay.
Can you tell me why that program would be so harmful that the terms of service really prevent it from being submitted to the Windows Store?
So
the Windows Store TOS says you can't have any component that can conceivably have its behavior changed by scripting or other content. And of course, the programming language does.
So the question is about small basic in particular. This is an So there is a rule that prevents, and this is what you're referring to, that prevents applications from downloading code from the internet and running it in the context of that application. That rule exists to prevent applications from exhibiting behaviors that have not been reviewed or are not able to be reviewed during certification. If it goes beyond what the description of the app is and what the reviewers have seen during certification, it may be causing risks for the users of the app. I'll be happy to hear more about the scenarios, probably at the office hours later on, and we can talk more about the current restrictions that are preventing you from doing what you want to do. Other questions? Go ahead. There was a person behind you that was raised. Windows 8 apps, so when I say Windows 8 app, it's that app targeting Mint OS version 6.2.1. that will run on a Windows 8 machine, and that will run on a Windows 8.1 machine. The opposite is not true. Right. It will not be delivered to the Windows 8 machine. So the question is, would an app that's targeting Windows 8.1 run on a Windows 8 machine if it's not using the new APIs? Does that summarize it? Yeah. For the app to be even downloaded and installed on the local machine, the store client has to deliver those bits to the local machine. The rule is a Windows 8.1 package is not applicable to the Windows 8 client and will never get downloaded and installed. Yes. Yes, you can choose to still deliver Windows 8 packages that will be delivered to Windows 8.1 clients. There's nothing forcing you currently to adopt the new APIs. However, we do recommend them because it's a better platform.
The recommendation is if you don't need the new APIs, keep going to Windows 8.0.
Yep. Once you believe that your customer base is mostly on a Windows 8.1 device and you want to use those new platform capabilities, then you'd make the leap. You had a question?
Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of experience with solo upgrading. I've seen people frantic because Microsoft Update has decided to force an update on their machine the time the channel gets to be quickly done. I've also just watched Microsoft Update spin on my computer for about 5 minutes. Do you think your Lavargo said we're going to have the customer in control?
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday they said customers will no longer be able to choose when they want to install updates.
Developers, the users that do not want these automatic updates can opt out of them. There will be a setting, but the default is the automated updates are delivered automatically. We can show you later and after this session. So the question is about that tip about soliciting user ratings. We said you're not allowed to offer rewards in exchange for positive ratings, but you are allowed to provide incentives for your users to provide a rating.
Okay.
Yes. To roll back? No, there isn't. So the question is there a way to roll back the app that was automatically updated? No, there isn't. So roll forward. So provide the old functionality in a future update, and that one will be automatically installed on the ones that haven't opted out. Yes, you have to go through certification again. Every update goes through certification. But it's averaging 2.2 days, and if you follow these tips, you may be doing it faster. Yes. Arik, I probably need help with this. So the question is, if you install the app on one Windows 8.1 machine, would it automatically install on all the others that you own?
Yes. So whatever operating system you're running on that, you will get the latest version that's available for there. So, and when a user upgrades from Windows 8 to 8.1, they'll automatically get their app upgraded as well if you have a Windows 8.1 version of the app as well. So.
The question is there a beta distribution method for the Windows Store? Currently, there isn't. So if you want to beta test, you have to manage it on your own. And there are ways to install applications outside of the Windows Store. Yes.
It requires either so the question is, what type of unlock is needed for that, for testing apps that aren't coming from the store? It requires either a developer unlock or it requires an enterprise unlock. So both of those are available. If you need more details, find me afterwards and all that.
The question is, will there be policing of negative reviews? Negative as seen by the developer, I assume. We monitor for abuse of the store in general, but if users are leaving negative reviews, we can't tell if it's a legitimate negative review or one that's abusing the capability. But we do monitor the store in general for abuse by Microsoft accounts.
We are watching out for people that are kind of spamming with negative reviews and taking those down. And if you believe a review is inappropriate, you can report a review on any particular app and report that, and that will get looked at, and the appropriate action will be taken.
So the question is about submitting an app that's very similar to another popular application is in the store and what we do about that. We have processes, again, to protect the store from abuse from developers. If we see a pattern of abuse, we take action. But we have to verify that indeed it is an abuse and it's not two people that are licensed to use the same brand and the same APIs.
The licensee, the person who owns that license and the trademark and that is the one that should report it, and then we will take action on it.
Sorry. Not quite. It's not a race on who gets through certification first. If you have a brand and you have trademarks and if you protected them properly, you still have the recourse of those processes. And there is a process to report copyright violations, for instance, to the Windows Store.
My question is, let's say you have
two different brands. So there is a process. There is a team that reviews those. I'm not on that team. I'm not the specialist for arbitrating on which one is the better one. But if you believe that once you have an app that it's being ripped off, you can. There's always a recourse for you with the processes that we made available. No, it's who you are, what the app is, what your claim is. Is it what type of IP was infringed? Is it the name? Is it the functionality, et cetera? But again, I'm not a specialist for that, but I know that there is a process that you can go to. Great question. I'm not the person that set up those processes, nor am I a lawyer. But great point. Again, I'm not the lawyer, nor am I the person that set up those processes. But we can talk about them. Point taken. Other questions? One more. I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? Yes. Once it's in certification, it'll be tested on any of or subset or all of ARM, x86, x64. It's not an emulator, it's an actual device. Yep. Other questions? One more. So the question is, if the application is being developed and is depending on a piece of hardware that we may not have, how do we handle that? We want to have the confidence that the application is compliant with the certification requirements, and in those cases, we may have a back and forth with you to verify how the application will behave when the printer is available. We're not asking you to send us your $12,000 printer. If you have more questions, we'll be in office hours throughout the day tomorrow, and we'll be happy to answer them. Thank you.